Welcome, everybody, to Between the Lines, a podcast produced by the Louis Jacobs Foundation and committed to Rabbi Jacobs' belief that the quest for Torah is itself Torah. And my name is Simon Eder. I'm joined each week by a special guest to help us to deconstruct that week's parasha, exploring new paths on the quest for Torah. And continue our journey through Shemot. It is wonderful to be by Rabbi Dov Linzer, who really is truly one of the leading lights of modern Orthodoxy. He is the Rosh Yeshiva of the modern Orthodox Yeshiva in New York, Chovavei Torah Rabbinical School in Riverdale. He's a wonderful teacher, lecturer, podcaster, and of course, author. He has been scholar in residence in synagogues across the United States, has published in numerous Talmudic journals and Jewish newspapers, and in 2011 was ranked among the 50 most prominent rabbis in the United States. And of course, many of his students now occupy some of the most prominent pulpits and, of course, Hillel's right across the U.S. and beyond. So Rabbi Linzer, really a very warm welcome to Between the Lines.
Thank you. Thank you. So wonderful to be here. And what a warm and lovely introduction. And yes, that last line, that's my real pride and claim to fame, is the wonderful rabbis we have out there doing such good work for Am Yisrael.
Sounds good. You've certainly raised the bar. We look forward to our discussion today on Tetzaveh. So maybe to begin, I really wonder why it is that the command to light the menorah, and indeed to give oil for its lighting, is included really at the beginning of this week's parsha, as opposed to within last week, where of course we read about the construction of the menorah itself.
Thank you. Yes, there's a really interesting parallel when you compare the beginning of this week's parsha and the beginning of last week's. They both command the children of Israel. Last week, command the children of Israel, and they should make for me a sanctuary. And here it's command the children of Israel, and they should take oil for the menorah. And I think when we hold them up side by side, what the Torah is telling us to do is to consider the difference between the effort that goes into and what it means to be building a sanctuary, and what it means then to actually do the work, the service, to actually sustain it and use it and support it. And it's very different when everybody gets really excited about a building project, and sometimes it's really the wealthy that are contributing the gold and the silver. And I think that this parsha is opening up by telling us, great, you have a sanctuary built. You now need a new effort to make sure that you are invested in keeping the lights going, keeping the lights running. And that's how this week's parsha opens.
You prompted a thought with that reference to building, but it seems that obviously these series of parshiyot are very much about building. I wonder, how does this building that we're referring to here and the lighting of the lights, obviously, how does it differ from the other kind of building projects that we have in mind?
The other building projects, like, you mean like when we build synagogues or mikvaot or schools, or what?
Well, I guess that's in a contemporary context, of course. No, I guess really just perhaps the Mishkan or the Golden Calf, or like there are a lot of building projects.
I see. I think that definitely one understanding is that clearly the Golden Calf shows how the children of Israel had a deep passion to be constructing and making something and dedicating to God. Don't do it by creating this idol, do it by creating a sanctuary. And in a way, also, they wanted a physical connection to God. And of course, the Torah is all against idolatry, because that's a corruption of the idea of God, to try to limit God in some physical form. But it allows us to have something physical to be the place of God and to actually connect to God there, because of the structure and the way that gives us that type of special space and allows us to connect in a physical way, but not that's bringing that physicality directly to God. I would also add that Ramban says that the Mishkan was a portable Har Sinai. They were about to leave Mount Sinai. And how did you sustain that relationship with God once you've left Mount Sinai? And it's that will always be with you. God will always be present in your midst. And that's what that building project is about.
Thank you so much. Maybe just returning to the menorah, and the verses, I think, indicate really that it should be lit by Aaron and his sons. And yet, if I'm not mistaken, I think in the Gemara, in Yoma 24b, it refers there that the lighting is not a priestly service. And I wonder how you see this kind of discrepancy and how that came to be, and why is that important?
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And it's a shocking Gemara. It says, command Aaron and they'll light the menorah. And the menorah is situated inside the holy section of the temple, the place that has very limited access. And here the Talmud tells us that it's not considered a temple service. And Rambam goes further. And Rambam says, actually, a non-Kohen can light the menorah. And you can bring the menorah out of the temple into a place where a non-Kohen can be, and they can light the menorah, and then you could bring it back in, which is just really shocking in terms of how we normally imagine that this is reserved for the Kohanim. And I think that's a real power in that, because another contrast with last week's parsha is that everybody got to participate in the building of the Mishkan, but only the Kohanim are going to get to be the daily divine service. So what did you as a normal Israelite do? You gave your animal and you like walked away. All of the real connecting to God, the divine service, was done there by the Kohanim. And I think that we're taking the menorah, which is maybe perhaps one of the most powerful symbols of light, illumination, Torah, the divine presence. And we're saying there are ways that you might not be able to do the work of the Kohanim, but there are opportunities for you to participate as well, even opportunities you didn't imagine would be available for you. So I think that's like why it also appears before the commandment of sanctifying the Kohanim, their special garments, which is the main emphasis of this week's Parsha, because it's saying, we'll get to the Kohanim in a minute. And even though this is usually done by the Kohanim, this doesn't have to be done. And it's a real message for us about seeking out opportunities for participation in our religious life, in the synagogue, because right now the synagogue so often has become professionalized, and there's a whole staff and rabbis, which is wonderful, but some people feel, where do I get to participate? And I think we have to seek out those opportunities.
Maybe that's a good segue into perhaps addressing this. And I really wonder what is the significance of the lighting of the menorah.
The Gemara in particular emphasizes that the menorah symbolizes the divine presence resting within the Jewish people. And light in general symbolizes mitzvot, and more specifically Torah. Torah illuminates it. It gives us wisdom. It shows us like light, how we should be living our lives. And there's a beautiful midrash that speaks about that a person who does a mitzvah, and it's like they light a light before God and give life to their soul. So it really speaks about the spirit within us and the connection to God. God's presence is light, but also how we seek out God's presence. And I really think that the importance of this idea that it comes before the Kohanim, and that this is saying that this is how everybody needs an opportunity to connect to God. Maybe Kohanim do it in a certain way. Don't feel excluded. The connection to God is so central that we have to seek out those opportunities, but we also have to do our work communally to make them available to everyone. And that's sometimes a place where we fall short.
Obviously, it feels that a lot of the details in this week's parasha build on some of the instructions from last week. I really wonder how you see the interconnect between the two.
I'm not sure I understand the question. In what way do you see them building? You need a temple to do the service, but did you have something more specifically in mind?
No, I guess just some of the kind of interrelationships that we see, perhaps a kind of understanding of how they go together.
Well, the way I'll take that question is, I think you can see the building of the Mishkan as a question about what is the purpose and the focus of the Mishkan, of the sanctuary. Is it about the sacrifices, which gets a lot of attention in Vayikra, and that's what we really focus about in terms of the daily service and all the sacrifices? Or is it about what we've been talking about, which is why the Aron, the Torah, God's presence, the menorah, and I think the opening pasuk in last week's parsha is so central. It says, you shall make for me a sanctuary and I will dwell in their midst. It doesn't say in its midst, in the midst of the sanctuary, but in their midst, in the midst of the people. And this week's parsha likewise opens with the lighting of the menorah. We do not get to the role of sacrifices in the temple until a good while later. Sure, there are sacrifices to sanctify, you know, the Kohanim, but that comes a good while later. And I think that gets back to the point of focusing on our service and asking ourselves this question about, are we finding opportunities to connect? And if I may, I want to pick up on a point I mentioned before about what we as a community are doing to make that accessible. And I think the image of that Rambam speaks about taking the menorah out and bringing it to people so that they can light it, as at least theoretically possible. Sometimes we are not aware about how the structures we have are telling certain people they're not wanted. And do we have ramps, or are we saying implicitly that we don't want people that are in wheelchairs? Do we have sidurim with braille, or are we implicit? We don't, and we're saying implicitly blind people don't need to come to the synagogue because we're not. How do we message actively and passively, intentionally and not intentionally, that are we trying to bring people in, or are we not making that effort? Are we bringing the menorah out to people, or are we just fine with the way it is? Some people have more access than others.
You speak about those areas with a lot of passion. And I know, I think it's an area that you've written quite a bit about, those with disabilities and how we do bring them in and so on. I really wonder what more you might have to say, like on this important area, and what should we take to heart?
Thank you. It is something that is very personal for me. I have two boys that are on the autism spectrum, and I've really experienced personally how challenging it can be for people with disabilities to feel welcome fully in Jewish community, in the Jewish institutions, and to have full access to Torah. Going back to the issue about the Kohanim and the rest of the people, there's a famous line in Pirkei Avot, in Ethics of the Fathers, that there are different crowns that were given to the Jewish people. The crown of the priesthood is given only to Aaron and his male descendants. But the crown of Torah is available to everybody. Everybody can come and pick it up. And that's nice in theory, but we haven't always made that true in practice. We haven't, for a long time, of course, women were societally excluded and they were not educated. They were told that that was not for them. People with disabilities, I will say that my boys had challenges reading Hebrew, and I looked around in vain to find a Torah graphic novel, and I could not find one. You know where I finally found one? I found one that the Christians did. They had a great graphic novel of the Bible. I tore out the last 20, 30 pages, okay, which was the part that's not our Bible, but they told a story in an engaging way, and you can learn Torah that way. Where are we? What are we doing to make Torah available to all? Not nearly enough, I think. And I really want us to be, and the last thing I'll say about the graphic novel point is, the general message of the disabilities community is like, special education is just good education. And if we had great graphic novels of the Torah, of the Mishnah, of the Talmud, or other types of ways of giving people access, believe you me, that adults would be looking at it, not just kids, a lot of kids that didn't have disabilities. It would make the Torah accessible in new and exciting ways.
Thank you for your passion on this, and certainly a subject that we look forward to taking up again. Maybe to return to one of the strands that we had explored, just around the role of the priests, which of course is prominent, and with the particular emphasis, as we read this week, about special clothes, a sanctification and initiation ceremony, I really wonder how you see this focus as being balanced by the wider people's involvement as well.
I think that the special clothes and the sanctification ceremony does again separate out the Kohanim and give them a special task and make them separate. And the right question to ask is, how much is that at the expense of the people, like they're better than you, or how much is it serving the people? The Talmud has a question, do we see the Kohanim as our representatives or as God's representatives? And while we often, when we think about the garments of the Kohanim as being very ornate, that really is just the garments of the Kohen Gadol, of the high priest. The normal Kohanim wore very simple white tunics. And in a certain level, they were actually interchangeable. It didn't matter which Kohen picked up your sacrifice. It was like an assembly line. There was no personality of the Kohanim there that was expressed. The only Kohen that has a personality is the Kohen Gadol. So it's possible to see it that maybe it's to actually give them a special role, but also anonymize them, if that's a word, so that the people can feel more that they're there, they're bringing their sacrifice, and the Kohanim are just going by the numbers, but see the Kohanim more as their representatives. It's one way of thinking about it.
Brendan, so really, thank you so much for joining us today and and exploring and speaking with such passion.
Simon, may I add one thought to leave people
of
with?
Of course, please.
So I want to go back, and this I think is so key, to that opening word of this parsha, titzaveh, command, which is a much stronger word than last week's parsha, which is daber, speak. And the rabbis say that titzaveh, command, means like command now and constantly. It's something that you really need to be pushed on. And the idea also in the opening of the ner tamid, the constant light, it's easy to give to a building project. But to keep things going, the constancy, sustained commitment, that can be really challenging and that we really have to work at. And going back to the purpose, to the point about disabilities, I would say inclusion does not happen by accident. And it is not that you once did something and now you're done. If it is something that you are committed to, then you have to be consistently working to sustain it and to looking to how you can do better. And I would encourage everybody to take that to heart.
Amen. Thank you so much. Such an important lesson for all of us in these difficult times as well, as we hope to build a better world.
Thank you. Amen. So, amen. Amen.
Rabbi Linzer, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please do remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can find out more about all of our details on our sites, jewishquest.org, louisjacobs.org as well. Do tune in again next week as we continue our quest together.